Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the show. This is Reservations, and I'm Rain Whalen.
And I'm Candy McElroy.
That one was better.
Better, yeah. Better. I got it mixed up. Here's the thing, is Healy told me seconds before we started, and I forgot it immediately. That's better, yeah.
You know, because I was going to say, because now it came back to me, because you used Shane McGillicuddy.
Okay, before. Yeah, you're right. And so, yeah, McElroy is way better. Yeah, that one's way better. Anyway, whatever. We started.
Oh, man. Well, welcome back, everyone. So, you know, we were talking off mic, because I specifically withheld this because I wanted to talk about it on mic. So we were talking about off mic about the things we've watched over the last week. And you've watched more than me. I haven't watched a whole lot, mainly because I've actually been in the process. Well, I've beaten it and now I'm replaying it. The Last of Us Part 2 to gear up for the second season of The Last of Us.
Right.
Because shit, man, you know. I've been trying to warn everyone who became a fan of The Last of Us last year. It was last year, right?
Yeah.
Last year. To gear up for that next season because it's going to be a rough one.
Yeah.
The game is amazing. The game is phenomenal. I can't wait to see how Craig Mazin tackles this story of the cycle of violence, which I think he'll be able to do. No problem. But then that kind of led me down a rabbit hole after I finished the game, because I remembered hearing that Naughty Dog, the developer, was releasing a documentary about making the game and post, like, because the documentary was supposed to come out when the game came out, but because of COVID, they just never released it. And then I guess now with the popularity of the show and the fact that they remastered The Last of Us Part 2 for the PlayStation 5, they're like, you know what? We're going to finally release all this. And it's look, I'm not saying that a documentary about a game developer was rough to watch. Cause I mean, there are true crime documentaries out there that are awful to watch.
Yeah.
Shout out to our Dear Zachary episode. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, definitely.
But watching this documentary about people who are just trying to make a game, specifically a game that took them 4 years to make. Yeah. Like, I believe they essentially said this was like the longest game that Naughty Dog ever had. Like took longest to make. It was insane when they did sort of like the new footage of hearing everyone talk about the death threats that they got. So I don't know if you knew that.
You know what? I think I've seen clips of this documentary on TikTok because, I scroll through TikTok all the time. And yeah, I've seen clips of them talking about it. I didn't know that's what it was. I just thought, this was like some like bonus features on the game or something. I didn't know.
Laura Bailey, who plays Abby in the game, which for spoiler alert for a 4-year-old game, everyone, she's the one who kills Joel because the game got leaked. Yeah, it's a big spoiler. That's another reason why I've been trying to gear everyone up for the second season, because they have to do it. I don't want to see Pedro Pascal die, but they have to do it, bro. They have to kill him. And more to the point, we have to see him die on screen. Like, it can't be an off-screen death. We have to. Anyway, that's besides the point. It was just insane. Like, Laura talking about, receiving death threats, because the game got leaked, like almost the entire game got leaked and it was released out of order. So like Neil Druckmann, who created the game, who is co-president of Naughty Dog, who also helped Craig on the show, also received death threats. And then when Joel's death scene got leaked, Laura Bailey got just the most horrendous death threats. And it was just, after the 2 hours was up, I was like, this is insane. Like, all these people were trying to do was just make a video game.
Yeah, and I think that's sort of an overreaction for sure. I would agree with that.
Well, and I was telling Ashley about it, and here's what's the most fascinating thing. So the game got leaked. Naughty Dog put out a statement like, hey, like, try to avoid these as best you can. And then the game officially comes out in, I think, July of 2020, to critical acclaim, like being hailed as a masterpiece, 10 out of 10. And Ashley was like, yeah, and I guarantee none of those fucking people ever apologized.
Probably not.
I was like, yeah, probably not. Probably not.
And they got super mad like that over a video game. You know what I mean? They're not like the apologizing type, you know?
Yeah.
So, all right. Cool. So that's what you've been doing? Just replaying the game?
I'm replaying it now because now that I've beaten it, I've unlocked some things like unlimited ammo, which comes in super, super handy, especially when you're playing as Abby and you fight an infected called the Rat King, which is supposedly the longest infected ever. Like, it like has like morphed and but yeah, if anyone wants to check out the documentary, it's called Grounded 2, because they did a documentary about the first game called Grounded. This one's called Grounded 2. You can find it for free on the Naughty Dog YouTube channel, 2 hours long, and it's an interesting watch.
Okay. So that would be like your recommendations that we're doing recommendations?
I guess.
So mine would be, it's not even close. It would be go see Jonathan Glazer's The Zone of Interest. Wherever you
go. Yeah, man.
It's incredible. I watched it this weekend.
I saw some stuff about that on, because A24 produced it, right? Didn't they? Yeah, I saw some stuff on their Instagram page about it, and I did a little bit more digging, and I was like, okay, I might need to take a look at this. And then, yeah, heard all the praise that it's been getting, and I'm like, okay, I think I'm gonna have to watch this now.
I think so. I think you're gonna have to see it. I can't wait to watch it again. I thought it was so well done, so beautifully shot. And it's not what you're expecting for sure. If you know what it's about, which is about the House family, I think that's how you pronounce it. HOSS, that lived next door to Auschwitz. He was the camp director, of the internment camp. And it's their day to day life, basically, living next door. And so, the entire film's main focus is in the house and on the premises of the house. Sorry, my cat is being insane right now, and I wish she wasn't. I apologize if you're hearing her jump around. And
it's Annie.
Yes, it's Annie. Doing that. She was so calm all day. It's always how it goes. But yeah, no, it's incredible. The way Jonathan Glazer shooting this thing was amazing. He said that he would set up the cameras all over the house. He always had at least like 3 or 4 going all at once. Like several microphones hidden around, absolutely no cameramen, no crew present. They were all at a different location watching on screens. And so the actors were by themselves. You can sort of kind of feel that isolation when you're watching, especially since it's such a cramped space anyway, that you're like, there's no way that there are other people there. But it's incredible. I can't sing its praises more. The Zone of Interest is by far the best movie I watched over the weekend. And, you know, I also watched The Iron Claw, you know, which was also great. But Zone of Interest just blew it out of the water. It's so good. So you got to see it.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I mean, it's a good year for A24 right now, man. And then all the stuff they got in the pipeline. I think the thing that makes me the most excited from them is Alex Garland's Civil War.
Yeah, Civil War is going to be great. Yeah, I'm excited about that.
And it's going to be A24's first like IMAX film.
I'm excited about She's over there. Sorry. Again, my cat is going nuts. Yeah, I'm excited about Civil War. It's not A24 related, but Love Lies Bleeding. I think that's going to be great. Neon.
That's A24.
It's A24. I thought it was Neon. Okay. Never mind. It sort of feels like a Neon film. You know, it
feels more like I get that. I could feel that. It looks good. You know, it's got Kristen Stewart, who I think is, you know, I think she's making all the right career moves. And then it's got the girl from The Mandalorian and Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. I feel bad because she's actually a really good actor, and I don't remember her name.
Ed Harris is also in it as well. And so, yeah, it's going to be really exciting. I'm excited to see that. And, of course, you know, Dune is coming out in a couple weeks. So, gotta go see that.
I kind of told Ashley, I was like, you're going to have to watch part one. I was like, because we're going to see part two. And she's like,
she's not excited either. So it's,
she was
we're just so listen, if we lived in the same city, we would just go together and it'd be fine. But we don't
exactly. I was like, what, do you want me to drive 5 hours away to go see Jeremy? I was like, because I will. Like, I'll drive 5 hours so we can go see this movie.
Yeah.
But
we'll see Dune.
One final other A24 news that I'm really excited for, that we can jump into the episode. The Sympathizer finally coming to HBO or to Max. I am so excited for The Sympathizer. It looks so good.
Yeah.
With and RDJ is pulling quadruple duty, playing four different characters.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
When is that out?
Pretty soon, I think. I think it's like just going to be a mini series. Hang on, I'm finding it right now. Shut up. It is premiering April 14th.
Okay, April
on Max. It'll it's listed as just a mini series. So I'm sure, you know, 6-7 episodes, 8 probably.
Cool.
But cool. Yeah.
All right. Nate.
Yeah. Yeah. So, buddy, what are we talking about today?
Okay. So today we are discussing Alfonso Cuarón's 2001 coming of age story, Y Tu Mamá También.
Oh, man. So I'm going to admit something to you.
Okay.
I watched it today.
Okay, today.
I'll tell you more once we get done with this, but yeah, I watched it today and it was not what I was expecting.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it was everything I wanted and more. Like,
did you watch this?
I mean, okay. Like, I barely, and I'm probably gonna, apparently my, I'm that whole thing may have just gotten bleeped or something.
Sure.
But yeah, no. It was awesome, man. It was, you know, I'm not gonna say you overhyped it. But I remember, like, way back when we first got started, you were already talking about this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, what is this movie? Like, and I remember reading a little bit about it and seeing, Diego Luna talk about it on a Variety interview. And I was like, okay, I was like, I didn't know he was in it.
Actually, and then, that's funny you mentioned that, because I was watching it the other day and I was going through stuff about it. And I was like, you know, again, this is how far removed I am from things that are very popular these days. I was like, you know what what Maribel Verdú is doing. I know what Gael Garcia Bernal is doing. It's like, what is this kid doing? What's he up to? And so I looked him up. I had no idea he's the guy in the new Star Wars stuff. I had no clue that's who that was.
Yeah, bro. Cassian Andor, my guy.
No idea. So I was like, oh, okay, cool. So he made it. So that's really good. Because
yeah, it's very interesting that our three leads have now all been in something like in a franchise, you know, Diego, of course, in Star Wars, Gael in Marvel, Werewolf by Night.
That's right.
Which was
great.
The fucking best thing. And then Maribel in The Flash, which, as I mentioned last week, how underutilized she was in that film. And
you can see why that's so disappointing when you see something like this. Right.
Yeah, yeah, especially considering us having done Pan's Labyrinth earlier this season and her character being polar opposite from Louisa.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Which we're going to get into.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, it was awesome. My only regret is I didn't get to watch my Criterion.
Oh yeah.
I bought it digitally because on iTunes it's $6 right now. So I was like, you know what? That's a steal.
That's a steal.
But I really wanted to watch that.
Yeah.
For the people watching, I'm pointing to my Criterion copy. Because I really wanted to crack it open and put the disc in, but
yeah,
I had to work Sunday, didn't have time with chores and everything, so I was just like, I'll watch it Monday. But anyway, so buddy, since you did the synopsis last week, would you like me to crank out the synopsis?
Sure, yeah.
For this one. Okay. I'm pretty sure you said it last week, but I'm just gonna say it again in case everyone forgot. Y Tu Mamá También is a coming of age story about two best friends, Julio, played by Gael Garcia Bernal, and Tanok. I can't even pronounce his last name.
No, it's a very Mexican last name. I've been saying Tenoch with the ch sound. I think that's how they say it in the movie too. So I'm, you know what I mean.
Like, maybe. Yeah. I only said Tanok because of the actor who was also in the Marvel movie, Tanok Huerta, who played Namor in Black Panther. His name is, and it's spelled exactly like that, but everyone says it's Tanok. So I
could be regional, you know what I mean?
Maybe. Anyway, Tenoch, played by Diego Luna, they're best friends. They're supposed to be like what, 16, 17?
They're 18. 16? They are just
graduated. They're 18.
Or they are graduating.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. These two 18 year olds who are about to graduate high school, their girlfriends are going off on a graduation trip to Italy, and they decide to spend the summer as quote unquote bachelors. And at a wedding for Tenoch's cousin. One of his family members at a wedding reception, he meets his cousin. Hang on, I have it up so I wouldn't forget. His cousin, Hano. Yes. His cousin Hano. They meet Louisa, Maribel Verdú, and they are almost instantly infatuated with her, inviting her out to the beach with them, called that Heaven's they Mouth. Just come up like yeah come up on the fly called Heaven's Mouth.
Yeah.
And she declines just because, you know, she's supposed to be in her late 20s, right?
Yeah, she's 28.
Okay. Yeah, so she's literally 10 years older than him, and so, you know, and also they kind of annoyed Hano at the reception, so yeah. But a couple of weeks go by, and Louisa learns from Hano himself that he has been cheating on her, and he's very remorseful about it. but she is just kind of like, you know what? I'm going to take up those two 18-year-olds on their offer, and calls them up and says, you know what? Let's go to the beach. And they said, cool. We don't know where to go. And so with the help of their drug dealer friend, Saba, he kind of tells them a rough place where they could go. That might be great. And the whole film is in the car pretty much, which honestly I loved, which we'll get to in a little bit, of them just passing the time, learning more about Luisa learning more about the boys. And I'm just going to refer to them as the boys for a little bit. And you know, it's very, wholesome with an asterisk, you know. They are admitting, they are telling her about their quote unquote sexual escapades and, you know, just being very open and honest with her, but also wanting to impress her because they are two 18-year-olds and they're hanging out with a 28-year-old. But things start to disintegrate the kind of budding friendship between the three when a distraught Luisa seduces Tenoch, and they end up having the quickest sex ever. And Julio is not jealous. And again, that's another thing I want to get to, I want to touch on. But he is sort of upset by this, which results in him admitting to Tenoch that he's had sex with his girlfriend. Then Luisa has sex with Julio, which then Tenoch admits to Julio that he's had sex with his girlfriend. And it all kind of culminates in Luisa pretty much telling them, you better not fight or I'll leave. Let's go to the beach and have a good time. And it all culminates in this very, I don't want to say odd, but that's the only word I can think of, threesome with everyone, where the boys, I guess, maybe have some underlying feelings for one another. Or we'll talk about that.
I mean, I disagree, but go ahead.
Yeah. And the trip ends. They all go their separate ways. The boys bump into each other a year later, have a very awkward conversation. Julio learns that Luisa had died a few months later from cancer, which is another reason why she decides to go on the trip. And that's it, Mama Tambia. I yada yada through a lot of stuff just because I know we're going to jump into it. Yeah. So, Jeremy, where would you like to begin?
Well, good question. This movie is so different from your typical film like this, right? At least American films like this are so different, right? I was reading the Roger Ebert review. Roger Ebert gave it 4 out of 4. You know, he loved it, obviously. He was saying that, you know, this movie couldn't have been made in America, number one, because Jack Valenti and the MPAA would have never allowed that.
100%.
The sexuality of this movie is a little too much for, you know, the American film system in order for it to get made and get a wide release, right? Mm-hmm. But what's really interesting about it is that it's not crass, it's not vulgar, it's not made out to be a joke either. Their conversations and their sexual acts and all of that, it's all done with an honest, earnest, you know, casual sense that is real, right? This is how people talk, right? This isn't Porky's, this isn't, you know, Meatballs, this isn't whatever, you know what I mean? This isn't American Pie. This is, you know, a very honest take of the sexual awakening coming of age story, right? Which I really like. It sets it apart from the rest of them.
Yeah.
And with these two, it's sort of interesting because, again, you know, as someone who's not really familiar with, you know, it's either a cultural thing, which I don't think so. It's either how close they are, but especially with them at the pool and they're both masturbating, like that was odd to me, right?
Yeah.
But again, I wasn't so much taken aback by it. I mean, it's not something that I would have done, right? but I didn't take it as sort of like, again, it wasn't a joke. It wasn't like they weren't being vulgar. They weren't, you know, being disrespectful in any sort of way to, they were just, it was just honest. It was, again, this frankness, this earnestness, this honesty of, you know, these two best friends are just, I guess, that close, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, they do kind of chase each other around in the shower a few scenes before that.
That's true. And again, that's something I wouldn't have done either. And again, it could be a cultural thing. It could also just be like, this is just how they are, right? This is their friendship, which, yeah, I appreciated.
Yeah.
I do love the road aspect of this movie because it not only gives us an insight into who these characters are in this form that's familiar, yet we're also getting a different look at Mexico, right? We're getting to look at, you know, the social and political state of Mexico in that particular time period. But I think the one thing that I absolutely love the most, I think, in this film is the omniscient narrator. That's what I love the most. Okay.
Yes.
Narration can be derivative. It can be boring. It can lessen the story that's being told. In this case, with the narrator being omniscient, with the narrator being ever present and all knowing, it gives an extra layer of story that goes underneath what we're being told and what we're being shown, right? You know, some of my favorites are, you know, when they're passing through the town that Tenoch's nanny came from, right?
Mm-hmm.
The narrator's letting us know that he's thinking about, oh, I've never visited this place, you know, where this woman that I'm very close to, that's very close to me and my family, is from, and I've never been here before, you know, and saying, you know, that she left when she was 13 and then she started working for Tenoch's family. And then he called her, you know, mom for the first however many years, right?
I think it was 4 years. Yeah.
Which tells you how close they are, right? And even in the very beginning of the film, you can see that, you know, she really cares for Tenoch, and that they really do have this bond and she really does love him, right? And so that's a big deal. And so, but that's something, that's an extra thing we get to know, right? The difference in their socioeconomic status between Tenoch and Julio, we get to know how that plays a part in their friendship, with our ever-present narrator. And I really like that. We'll get to my favorites in a moment, but those are just some that I really liked. And I think really seals the whole film together. And I think without it, I think it's a good movie, but it's not a great movie. I think with the omniscient narrator, it's truly a great story because we get those extra layers.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I mean, I don't think, you know, if it didn't have these things, I don't think it would have gotten a Criterion release. Maybe, or maybe it might have. Who knows? But yeah, you know, the thing that caught me off guard in a good way, and I'm glad you mentioned it already, is the class difference between Tenoch and Julio. Because I feel like that's just another layer to their friendship. That Tenoch, you know, he comes from money, and Julio's family is hardworking, and they have to earn everything that they have. And I was wondering when it was going to come out, you know, this difference between them. And again, you're right, because it is a very, I feel like most coming of age films, you know, like the one that's been coming to mind every time we mention the genre of coming to age, has been Stand By Me. I don't know why that one specifically, but sorry, I lost my train of thought there.
It's okay. You were talking about their classes.
Yes. Yes, because you were saying that it is a very honest portrayal, and I agree, it is very honest, because you know it finally does come up, it comes up so naturally after Tenoch admits to Julio that he had sex with his girlfriend, and you know Julio gets mad and wants to fight him, and Tenoch calls him a hick, or at least in the translation he says hick, and which obviously was an insult. And I was like, there it is. There it is. Because even deep down, Tenoch sees him as different. Mm-hmm. That we are not in the same league here, kind of thing. Yeah. But yeah, that was something that caught me off guard. But again, I really, really liked. I really, because I think they're for their friendship, one, to really be believable, is yeah, there has to be this something that separates them, whether it be class, whether it be age or something. And I like that Alfonso chose a class difference. Mm-hmm. Very reminiscent of our season season three premiere, Parasite. Mm.
Yeah. 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 And you know, like with that, with the sort of difference between Julio and Tenoch, which isn't really that, I mean, it's different, obviously, yes, because Tenoch is, you know, they're wealthy, and then Julio's is sort of just working class or middle class, right? Mm. But then when we get out of Mexico City and then we see like what people are like outside of that, outside of Mexico City, it's sort of, again, a different Mexico, right? Mm-hmm. It's even a starker difference, you know, of how people are and how people live. And I love that, you know, we don't dwell on these things too long, but when they're driving by certain things, you know, like the bug that is covered with the wedding, you know, the congratulations, they just got married, right? That was fun. Then you have like the drug bust with the cops, yeah, and they're hopping out of the car, right? And then you have the that girl who's like their queen for the day or whatever, and you know they're asking for donations or whatever, mm-hmm, sort of a way to gain an income, right? And then the places they stop along the way, and when Luisa gets that that bear,
yes,
that has, yes, her name, and then you get the story of where that comes from and why it was so important to her, and you know, I like that, you know, again, the road movie, right? Road movies are always, mm-hmm, so cool. And they always give you this other perspective of ways of life and giving the characters sort of a way to see things beyond their own lives, right?
Right.
Which I really, really like. And that, I guess, that can bring us to Luisa, who is amazing. You know, Mary Bell Verdú, she is incredible. So yeah, I mean, when we first meet her, you know, we sort of, I felt bad for her because, you know, she's essentially just being hit on by these two kids, and they're bugging her and they're annoying her or whatever. They're too much, right? They're so energetic and they're so excited to be talking to someone like Luisa that they just, you know, they're just like vibrating. And I felt bad. Yeah. But then, you know, when we get to know a little bit more about her, and, you know, when she goes to the doctor, and we don't really dwell on that too much either. I think we're made to forget about it, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, when Hanno calls and says that he's been cheating on her, and, you know, you just feel so bad for her again. And I like that she decides then to just, you know what, let's be free, right? She had taken that that magazine quiz that said that she was, you know, not letting herself be free, right? Is holding herself captive and, you know, not letting herself enjoy life, essentially. And so that on top of all the other stuff, she's just like, you know what? Let's just go with these kids. Let's, you know, go enjoy life and let's go to this beach and it'll be fun. It's very important that they are graduating high, or have already graduated high school, and you know that they are essentially adults. Thank God. So don't worry about that. Just to, so you know, not only was Tenoch's sex scene with her very short, but Julio's, they are the exact same amount of time. That is important. Like to the second, they're the exact same amount.
Okay.
And what I like is that sort of comes naturally as well. I think Luisa is, she's young enough to where she's not feeling so prudish or not feeling as if she can't have these conversations with these guys, right? I feel like 28, you're still sort of, you know, you don't feel as uncomfortable, right? And of course, she's making conversation. This is how people talk anyway, right? Again, that's the realism in the conversations is impressive and it's incredible. And it's something that, you know, again, sets it apart from these other stories that are like this or try to be like this. But I feel like the sex between them comes somewhat naturally, right? I mean, she's still so distraught and so sad and so, you know, we don't know it at the time, but she's also dealing with a diagnosis, right? And, you know, that her life is coming to a close and it is, you know, the definition of life is too short. So, yeah, you were going to say something?
Oh, no. I was agreeing. And I was also going to, the only thing I was really going to say is, you know, with like Tenoch's sex scene, for example, I think it was a situation of he just happened to be there.
Right. And Luisa says that, you know, when she and Julio were in the car and, you know, they're, you know, starting to, you know, you're about to have sex, you know, and Tenoch runs off. She goes, you know, if that had been Julio that walked in, it would, the same thing would have happened. I mean, it doesn't matter. Right. Mm-hmm. I don't know if she's meaning to, or she is deliberately trying to have them have these experiences with her. I don't know if she is deliberately trying to have them have this sort of sexual awakening or sexual experiences with someone who is older. I don't know. I feel like, no, I don't feel like she is doing this deliberately. I don't think so. I don't think she's trying to teach them anything necessarily.
I agree. Cause like I did do some reading after the film was over and she, you know, I read that when she has sex with Julio, it was meant to kind of equal everything. Well, I had said sex with Tenoch, I'll have sex with Julio, because I think she can see the class difference in the two. And it's almost like, especially as we see after, you know, she tries to comfort Tenoch after he runs off, that, you know, this was always the plan that they were going to try to sleep with her. But I also agree. I don't think she's doing this deliberately. You know, maybe she might be doing it as a way to maybe to help them understand that sex isn't like just, you know, like when she's asking them questions like, what do you do? Like, do you make love? Do you do these things? Like, do you essentially like, do you have foreplay with your girlfriends before you have sex? You know, so like when I say not deliberately, I don't think she's deliberately trying to cause a rift between them or anything.
Definitely
like that.
Definitely not. No, I don't think that at all. I'm just trying to think, I don't think her character is being used as a sort of teacher or a sort of
right.
Because she is her own person and she is doing these things for herself as well, right? Because she is going through these monumental life events, and that I think really she is just trying to get back her own freedom, right?
Mm-hmm.
And take back all of that. So to say that she's doing this, to which, I mean, nobody said, these are just questions that I thought of. I think that she's doing this for herself, not necessarily for them necessarily. I think, yes, she's trying to even things out, right? Because I feel like with that narration that, you know, Julio wasn't upset necessarily. He wasn't jealous, but he was something else, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it might just be, you know, he may feel that Tenoch gets things easier, maybe.
I agree.
Julio feels that, you know, it's like, oh, of course, right? And again, it's not a jealousy thing. It's just sort of like, yeah, that's just how it goes, right?
I think I know what that might be.
Go ahead.
Envy. Because it's not necessarily, because you're right, because I agree with that. I don't think he was jealous necessarily, but I think he was envious, you know, that he wanted to be the one to sleep with Luisa first, especially considering he's kind of the one who brings her to Tenoch's attention,
mm-hmm.
you know, at the reception. So I think more so he was envious that he wasn't the first one.
Maybe.
And I also agree with what you said, that he definitely, because Tenoch's comes from money, things come a little bit easier to him than Julio.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think so. And so, like, in terms of the sex scenes between them, I think this third and final one, I have thoughts on that, because I don't feel like there are these underlying feelings between the two of them. I don't think that, because that's not what the story is about necessarily. You know, the story obviously is about sexual discovery and self-discovery, and, you know, it's one of those stories that, the way Roger Ebert put it, he said, yes, it's a story that's after that summer, nothing was ever the same, but this movie redefines what nothing means, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which I really liked, because it's not that just nothing was ever the same again. It's these specific things were never the same again, right? And do I feel like them kissing each other or them having this experience with one another impacted the way they saw each other and the way that they interacted with one another and what happened to them? Of course, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah.
I don't believe it has anything to do with their attraction to one another. I think that it was just so much all at the same time. And again, they're very young. And so it's like, all of this emotion, all of these feelings, all of this was happening all at the same time, and you just get caught up in the moment. I feel like that's what that was. I feel like they just didn't know what else to do. They had so much affection to give, and they didn't know what to do with it. I feel like it's a sort of naivete with their feelings and with their emotions and with their sexuality.
Okay, you know, because that helps. Because I, as I was saying it during the synopsis, I didn't believe that they actually had feelings for one another, because the film at this point hadn't really established that they had feelings for one another, that they were just best friends. But that makes more sense, you know, especially considering, leading up to that, Luisa pretty much laid down the law with them and said, pretty much, none of us are having sex again. Like, you will do what I say, you know.
Yeah.
And then sort of the culmination of their trip all ends in them drinking and having a good time and eventually having sex. So I think you're right that that it was just sort of, they got kind of caught up in the moment. I mean, especially, not to be crass or crude, Luisa was on her knees. So, I mean, they didn't really have anywhere else to put that affection.
Right.
And, you know, and I agree. I mean, because especially considering, you know, the following morning, both of them are very shocked when they kind of look over at the other one.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I but it is such an interesting thing, because I thought the same thing when the narrator came back in. I was like, nothing was the same after that.
Pretty much. And but it's so specific in the way nothing, again, that's what gets me, you know. And man, but that night before, so the with them drinking at that, you know, bar-esque thing out on the beach, incredible sequence, because you know, it's a oneer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Before they shot that scene, the night before, Alfonso Cuarón took everybody out. It was at the same place, and they all drank, and they had a good time, and they were like, you know, it was essentially the same thing, right? And he said, all right, remember exactly what you did? Do that. And so that's where they kind of got sort of the rhythm of what they were going to do, and, you know, how they were going to talk to one another, and, you know, and what order they were going to do things in, because again, it's a one take thing, right? So it's and it's very long.
Yeah, Diego Luna, in that Variety interview, he said that they had to film it a few times, and he was like, you know, I felt so bad, essentially, for the camera operator, because, you know, it was filmed on film. Mm-hmm. So he's like, you know, he's holding these giant mags. And but yeah, he talks about how he refers to it, and maybe I'll need to rewatch the film, but how that sequence is so iconic now, and I could see it. But he said it twice. He's like, you know, this is a very iconic scene in this film. And I think he's right, because it shows. I think the having it filmed in one fluid motion, you know, and everyone's talking over one another, everyone's drinking, and the fact that we follow Luisa to the jukebox and then follow her back. Insane.
I know. And, you know, it's sort of not just, you know, it's also what's being said, right? They're coming to terms with, they're forgiving one another, right? They're letting bygones be bygones. They're, mm-hmm. you know, getting back to the swing of things. And it's also where we get the title of our movie, right? You know, they're talking about Tenoch and Julio are discussing, like, well, you know, I had sex with a girlfriend a couple of times, actually, you know, whatever. And then the other one's like, yeah, me too. You know what I mean? You know, and then they're discussing, like, well, did she do this to you or whatever? It's like, yeah. And then Julio says, you know, and y tu mami también, you know, and your mom too. You know, which is an insult in Spanish. So if said with any sort of malice or insult, it's, you know, one of the worst things you can say to someone.
Yeah.
And of course they're joking around and they're having a good time or whatever. So he doesn't, you know, Tenoch doesn't take it as an insult, but, it's sort of like they're finally, you know, okay again. And they've squashed it, and it's fine, and, you know, it's maybe even brought them closer together, right?
Which is fascinating, because with the scene we just discussed of the threesome, it essentially tears down all that work that they just
is fascinating, because you're right. Again, with the omniscient narrator. So this is where the omniscience is important, because the narrator knows the future also, right? Mm-hmm. Yep. Some of the saddest ones are when he's talking about what will happen next, right? We're not going to see it. We're not going to see these people again. But here's what's going to happen to them, right? It isn't the saddest one, but one of the saddest ones is the fisherman. Right, because mm-hmm. they've
Chewie.
Yeah, Chewie. They've met this family and they're, you know, the family's brought them in and they're feeding them and they're showing them a good time. And they really welcomed them into their, you know, their space at the beach. And they're saying that, you know, soon a hotel is going to buy this land and Chewie's going to have to leave and he's going to go do something else. And when he comes back, he's going to be a janitor and he will never fish again. Yeah. And it's just the finite, the absolution of he will never fish again. And this is something that brings him so much joy in the present, right? And we're seeing it. We're seeing he loves it. And yeah, man, it just hits me so hard because I, you know, it's just that permanence of, you know, this narrator just, he just knows, right? And you kind of have to just take it and just, you know, this is what's going to happen to him. And there's something about knowing the future for these characters that we're not going to see anymore within this story. You still get to know the end of theirs. And then, of course, when we get to the restaurant and the two of them, that's the saddest one.
Yeah. I was going to say, with the whole, the conclusion of Chewie's story, essentially, it kind of reminded me a lot of Irreversible. The end of Irreversible, we see them all happy, knowing what we know, and we're at the end of the film.
Yeah.
You know, that's what it kind of reminded me of, that, you know, we see Chewie and how happy he is. And, you know, they said that he's like, what, a fourth generation fisherman?
Yeah.
That they live on the coast, essentially. And this is what's brought him so much joy. Yeah, dude, because that like, I was like, damn you, Alfonso. Like, you're just going to shatter us like that?
Yeah. I mean, it hurts, you know, that, you know, we've come to, in a very, very short amount of time, we've come to really like these people.
Especially when they're at the bar and Julio keeps going, like, hey, Chewie, hey. And like, you know, and it's just, yeah. And then, yeah, when the boys meet, run into each other a year later, it's so sad because, you know, they're just small talking because it would be too awkward not to. And, we're seeing a shell of their former friendship for one another. And
yeah, it's really devastating because, you know, we get to, you know, Luisa gets sort of this beautiful send off in this, you know, sort of just her being her full self and her realizing, you know, that realizing her freedom, basically, right? She has taken back her freedom. She is whole again. Okay. Which is great. And that's what the boys provided for, essentially, you know. I think that this, in terms of like what your expectations are, you expect, you know, her to sort of fulfill something for them. But I think it's the opposite. I think they really did help, unknowingly, of course, but they really helped solidify her and her freedom and taking back herself, right? But with the boys, and again, when they meet one another again a year later, you know, it's that, and again, it's just, it's heartbreaking, right? Because we're seeing them chit-chat, you know. And again, the first punch is that Louise is gone, right? And that she passed away months after they left her there, right? They left her at the beach, and months later, she will be dead. Okay. That's hit number one. Okay.
Yeah.
And that's so devastating. And that, you know, she, you would think that she would have bonded those two forever. And then,
well, and you know, because Julio didn't know,
right?
Which I think is a hit one and a half.
Yeah, you're right, because they both didn't find out at the same time, or you know, whatever. Like, how would, I think it's because Tenoch is sort of like is related to Hano, which would have found out whatever. So I think maybe that makes more sense. But yeah, and so Louise is gone. That's devastating, right? In and of itself. And then they chit chat a little bit more, and then they go their separate ways. And our narrator comes back, and he lets us know that they will never see each other again. This is the very last time they will ever speak to one another or see each other ever again.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something about that permanence that's so sad. And listen, if you think about it, we have, I'm sure, spoke to someone that we used to know very well, and we have probably already spoken to them for the last time. That's probably already happened to us, right?
Probably, yeah.
Which is sad to think about. You don't want to think about stuff like that. I'm sure that's happened, but just knowing for sure, like in this movie setting, knowing for sure that these two will never speak to each other again, after going through all of that together, after being so close, it's so sad. And I don't know what to make of that yet. I don't know what that means. I don't know what, I know it has everything to do with that last night together. Which isn't technically the last night together because they had to drive home, you know? And
right. But
the narrative says that it was uneventful. Nothing really happened. It was whatever. Right.
And I think he also said it was silent.
Mm-hmm. It's
yeah. So sad. Yeah, I agree, man. I agree because, you know, that last night that they had with Louisa, you know, as we were kind of discussing, yeah, sure, the boys got caught up in the moment and, you know, they kissed one another. But I'm sure it was probably the most magical night that they ever had with Louisa. And yeah, you're right. You would have thought this would have brought all three of them really, really close together. But then, again, it seems like everything just came crashing down after that, you know? Anna and Cecilia, her name? Cece?
Yeah, something like that.
I think just called her Cece the whole movie. Anyway, their girlfriends come home. Cecilia. You know, they come home from Italy and they dump the boys. You know, I'm sure they probably had the same conversation of them admitting to one another that they had sex with each other's boyfriends.
Maybe.
And they dumped the boys, and you know, for me, I think the saddest part was that how they got over it. You know, Tanoch got over it in 2 months, I think the narrator said, but it took Julio 9 months to move on and start trying to date again.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that kind of broke me first before the news of Louisa, just because it also really showed the class difference again, that Tanoch was just sort of like, well, okay, I guess I'm moving on. But Julio maybe didn't love Cecilia, but maybe really cared for her and thought maybe he could love her one day, and now he'll never know, you know? And so for me, that was the first gut punch. And then the reveal of Louisa, I was just like, oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
You know, it is very fascinating. And I think if this movie had ended any other way, a different coming of age story, like, again, I'll use Stand By Me as an example, you know, the boys all make it home safely. They come out unscathed and, you know, they still remain friends until they all grow up and they all one by one move out of their hometown. I think if this film ended like that, where everything was fine. And, you know, I don't think the ending would have been as impactful, you know, had like, let's say the girls came home, they still broke up with the boys, but they're like, you know what? It's not a big deal because we had an amazing summer together. It's not, I don't think it would have hit us harder with the reveal of Louisa dying from cancer.
Yeah, because that bond is definitely gone, right?
Mm-hmm.
With Louisa being gone. So there's really nothing left, which is so weird, which is so sad. And,
you know, Alfonso, we know you're listening. why, you know, but then again, I expect no less from Alfonso Cuarón. I mean, you know, it, cause again, and I will die on that hill, and I'm sure you would agree with me, if the film ended any other way, I don't think you would have chosen this movie for an episode, to be honest.
Probably not. You're right. I wouldn't have thought about it too much afterward. You know, again, it's just that, you know, the chain reaction of events and, you know, the, again, the sort of permanence of loss of a friendship is so sad. And then, you know, just in a loss of, I wouldn't even know what to call Luisa to them. But I mean, a friend, maybe, for sure, I mean, but
oh yeah, friend. I mean, I was toying with the idea of saying maybe the loss of their innocence, but I mean,
no, because they weren't virgins, right? They weren't virgins on this, yeah, on this road trip, which I feel is also important because you don't want Luisa to be like the deflower, right? She's just, you know, giving them a new sexual awakening and experience, right, and discovery, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I don't know. But
I don't know, but
the movie is wonderful. And
I agree.
Yeah.
And I think that's such a brilliant way to cap off a coming of age story of just a gut punch.
Yeah.
That things didn't actually work out. That yes, nothing will ever be the same, but you know, things will things drastically changed after that summer ended, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. If everyone wants a feel good, coming of age story, go watch Stand By Me, which isn't technically a feel good, cause you know, it revolves around best friends seeing a dead body. I guess watch Spider-Man Homecoming. That's technically a coming of age movie.
Sure.
Okay, there was one other thing I wanted to bring up.
Sure.
Before we get to getting ready for wrapping up. It was the fact that Gael and Diego looked so young.
Yeah.
I did the math. When this movie came out, they were 22 and 23 respectively. And I'm like, they look like babies.
I know they do. They look really young. Yeah.
Yeah. Especially like if you watch Andor with Diego or Werewolf by Night with Gael, you know, completely different, you know, Gael's really proud that his hair is gray now. Cause he's going
gray, which is crazy. Cause this movie is only 24, 23 years old. Which I guess, I mean, that is a long time, but I mean, yeah, he's.
Well,
yeah.
But I mean, if you look at Diego, gorgeous black hair, like, you know, and oddly enough, sidebar, I'm sure you knew this. They're best friends in real life. Even before they did this movie, apparently they grew up together.
Yes. Gael, asked for Diego to be in the movie. Alfonso Cuarón's like, no, he doesn't. He's not right for it. I don't want him for it. I think
he's a teen heartthrob.
Yeah, he was. Apparently, he was on a soap opera in Mexico, and you know, he was a huge star. He was like basically Jonathan Taylor Thomas, and
I'm so glad. I'm so happy that you made that comparison. So and what you're saying is Diego Luna is the Mexican Jonathan Taylor Thomas.
Yes. And you know, Bernal is like, listen, like, I know, I get it, but I promise, like, we're already friends. It's going to work great. The chemistry's already there. Like, we're already buddies. He goes, fine, we'll give it a shot. And then you get this, and then it's perfect. Right. And I'm glad that there's still friends. Yeah. You know, that makes me so happy. But they're still
yeah, and, well, And, you know, and as we mentioned last week, you know, and throughout the episode, they both love this movie so much. You know, when Gael did his episode of The Criterion Closet, I think this was like the third or fourth movie he picked out.
Yeah.
You know, so it was very early on. And, you know, he, you know, had nothing but fantastic things to say. Because, I mean, I think the film speaks for itself. I mean, hopefully we did a good job of wanting people to go see this movie.
Yeah.
But then, as we've been saying throughout the episode, you know, Diego, that was the first movie he talked about in that Variety interview. Because I think he was doing like a, I think it was like their series, like Rewind My Career kind of thing. And that was like one of the first movies he talked about. And so, you know, they both clearly still love this film. And I tried to find some stuff with Maribel. Like, I wanted to see if maybe she's talked about it, but she's only been more recently getting into English speaking films.
Oh, okay.
Like that movie I mentioned a couple weeks ago, Ray and Raymond with Ewan McGregor and Ethan Hawke.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize that was her because she doesn't look that different, but like she's speaking English. And so it didn't register with me. That's who it was. But
right. Yeah, that makes sense.
Like I saw an interview with her doing press for that movie. And, you know, and again, if I've said it when I brought that movie up, that movie's fine. If you have an Apple TV Plus subscription, I mean, watch it. It's fine. Ethan and Ewan actually have really good chemistry. That was the only reason why I watched it, because their chemistry was actually really, really good. Maribel wasn't necessarily underutilized, but they kind of rushed her character arc a little too much, where Ewan McGregor's character falls in love with her after like a day.
They get together. She's typecast.
I mean, that's true. the movie's phenomenal. I'm glad I now own it on Criterion.
It's awesome. Yeah.
I'm going to have to rewatch it. I'm going to try to maybe convince Ashley to watch it with me. To be honest, she probably won't get past the sex stuff just because
maybe not.
Yeah. She's very much of the mind of the same of Henry Cavill. Like sex scenes and movies just shouldn't be there.
Interesting. Okay. Haley was out of town, so I watched it by myself, but I don't think she would have liked it either, but who knows? So definitely see it. I'm so happy you loved it. And that was Itumama Tambien. What are we doing next week?
So next week, it is my final pick, because Jeremy, we're getting close to
we're getting there.
The wrap up of this season. So this is my final pick. You already know what it is.
I do.
Before I announce it to everyone, I just want to mention that this is a film that is apparently very divisive amongst a lot of people. I remember telling you about an article I read called "It's the film that A24 wants to forget." And you know what? To be honest, that makes me want to watch it even more. Like the fact that supposedly A24 is even trying to be like, "Hey, forget about this movie. Don't pay attention to this movie." So next week we are discussing the 2018, and I'm reading verbatim because I like this description, the 2018 surrealist neo-noir black comedy mystery film Under the Silver Lake. The only thing I know about this film is it's got Andrew Garfield in it.
Yeah.
And Riley Coe. And that's it.
Yeah. I remember seeing previews for this film. I remember thinking it was really interesting. I just saw that it's the same writer director of It Follows, which is interesting.
Okay.
I like It Follows a lot. I think that's an awesome horror film. But this one, yeah, I think I may have even tried to watch it once. But I don't really remember. So we're just going to go ahead and say I didn't do that because I don't remember anything about it. And yeah, it looks super bizarre and it looks like it's going to be weird and hard to follow. So we'll see.
The praise for the film was the originality, direction, soundtrack, cinematography, and of course Andrew Garfield's performance. That was the praise, but a lot of people found the screenplay too confusing and too cryptic is what it says.
Okay.
Which again makes me just want to watch it more. It makes me wonder if this is, hang on, I had his name up, the writer director, David Robert Mitchell. It makes me wonder if this is his take on trying to do a Lynch film.
Maybe.
You know, because surrealist neo-noir black comedy mystery makes me think of our earlier, you know, just a few weeks ago, episode on Lost Highway.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he's trying to do something sort of Lynchian in this. Which, yeah, who knows? I'm excited. We're going to watch it. We're going to see how it goes. I know that you can watch it on, I believe it's HBO Max. It's on there, I think.
I don't know. I physically bought it because I went through this whole thing where I was like, you know, I'm going to own... not necessarily every A24 film, but I was like, I'm going to own the ones that really stand out to me.
Yeah.
And this was one of them. So sure. I physically have it.
Cool. All right. Under the Silver Lake. That'll be fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Super excited. You know, I will never say no to Andrew Garfield.
Yeah, of course.
All right, everyone. We hope you enjoyed this episode on Y Tu Mama Tambien. And we will see you next week for Under the Silver Lake.